really look for soft skills, i.e. your EQ. Venture capital business in general really is a relationship business. So do I get the sense from you that you can engage with clients in a professional manner, but one that can feel like a personal connection?
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to season two of the Girls Into VC podcast. I hope all of you are doing well and enjoying the warmer weather. Girls Into VC is the first organization dedicated to increasing the number of women in venture capital. We are forming a pipeline of talented and motivated young women ready to enter VC with the educational resources and mentorship we provide. My name is Kritika Jain, and I'm your podcast host. I'm super excited to interview our guest today as she works in a very niche but impactful and growing area of VC. She began her career in investment banking at Cowen's Equity Capital Markets and later moved to Wells Fargo Securities with a focus on telecommunications, media, and technology. Now she serves as a director of Cowen Circle, an investment firm founded in 2015 to provide transformative capital to late-stage fintech growth companies. As of 2023, she also became the principal of Cowen Circle's affiliated impact arm, Radiate Capital. Alongside a women-led team, she invests in health and financial services businesses that provide solutions to critical global solutions alongside compelling financial returns. Recently, she was also recognized as one of the Venture Capital Journal's 40 Under 40 Rising Stars for 2024. Without further ado, I am pleased to welcome Corinne Bortnicker, principal at Radiate Capital. Welcome, Corinne.
Thank you, Kritika. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and it's a pleasure to have you. So I know I kind of gave our listeners a brief overview, but I'm sure you would be able to give us a lot more detail into your career path.
Absolutely. So I started in, as you had mentioned, in investment banking, initially in equity capital markets. Equity capital markets is a group that helps companies raise private and public equity. So think of your IPOs or your secondaries where companies are already public and they're looking to raise capital, or private capital as well. I initially was focused on biotech and life science companies before I moved to Wells Fargo in 2017, where I focused on tech, media, and telecom in the equity capital markets group there. I stayed there up until about 2 years ago, where I had the opportunity to join Cowen Circle. It was actually through my sell-side engagements at Wells Fargo that I got to meet Betsy Cohen and Amanda Abrams, who are the founder and CEO, respectively, of Cowen Circle, and was able to join them full-time to support their public strategy, as well as build out Radiate Capital, which is our partner impact fund.
Very cool. So I'm just curious, I feel like nowadays it's very typical for people to just do their 2 years in investment banking and then leave to do private equity or venture capital, but you were at Wells Fargo for much longer, so what compelled you to stay for that long?
I feel very fortunate for the way that my career developed. When I moved over to Wells, within the first 12 months, my vice president and director left the group to pursue other opportunities. So that just left a managing director, myself, and a junior analyst. And at that time, my managing director sat me down and said, "This space is yours to take. Unless you tell us you need help, we are not going to fill the spaces above you." I had fantastic teammates, both within my direct group and across the teams that we partnered with across the bank, that supported my growth in that period. And I was able to engage with senior managers across the organization and C-suite clients for the companies that we were partnering with. I was learning every day and growing in a capacity that I just didn't see the same opportunity outside of investment banking, both within the organization and in other opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that definitely sounds like a very unique opportunity. So great to hear that you were able to take advantage of that. So now you're at Cowen Circle. You talked about how you were introduced to the founders. Can you tell us a little bit more about what attracted you specifically to VC?
Absolutely. When I was working in equity capital markets, I learned two core things about myself. I absolutely love working with passionate founders who are building solutions, that are creating things that are tangible, whether we see them every day or they allow us to live our life in a way that we don't even realize. And then separately from that, I also learned that I really love storytelling. So when you meet a really strong founder or leader of an organization, usually the passion for what they are building comes through in the story that they tell about why their solution is needed and why they're doing what they do. in equity capital markets, in the group that I was in, I would typically engage with these founders or the C-suite management team when they were getting ready to go public. So they were already pretty late stage, really ready to take that next big journey. So by moving into VC, I get to engage with these C-suite members and the companies that they're building at an earlier stage of their life cycle, when each strategic decision that they make can materially impact the business. And that is incredibly exciting to me.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about Cohen Circle's biggest successes?
Absolutely. So Cohen Circle was founded in 2015 by a mother-son duo, Betsy and Daniel Cohen. Betsy's incredible. She's a fintech pioneer. She founded the Bank Corp, which is a sponsor bank for PayPal. And her son, Daniel Cohen, has also founded companies in the mortgage insurance space. So Betsy and Daniel, along with the broader team that they built, have this really deep knowledge base of insurance, mortgage, financial services. One of the biggest successes that the Cohen Circle brand has really been built off of is in 2015, Betsy and Daniel saw the opportunity in the SPAC market. Now, SPACs are special purpose acquisition companies. They enable private companies to go public via a reverse merger. And the reason why a company would do that versus a traditional IPO is because it's an expedited timeline. So it's a much quicker, there's typically less fees associated with a company going public that way. And they get the partnership and knowledge base of the SPAC management team. Mm-hmm. Typically, in the past, SPACs were reserved for oil, gas companies, and energy companies, i.e. not high growth. Betsy and Daniel saw the market opportunity to bring this strategy to fintech companies. And so they have successfully brought over 5 companies public via this type of strategy, and they really were one of the catalysts for where SPACs got to over the course of those many years. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest successes, and a proof point of how this can work, is a company that they brought public in the fintech space is called Card Connect. They brought Card Connect public through a SPAC, and within a year, Card Connect was acquired by a major player in their space, and the shareholders of Card Connect saw a 50% plus return on their investment in that company.
Oh, wow. So definitely have done a lot of good work in the SPAC space. So I wanted to know more about Radiate Capital because it is relatively new compared to Cohen Circle. What is its investment thesis and how does it differ from Cohen Circle?
Absolutely. So Radiate Capital is a women-led and owned fund focused on health and fintech companies that are improving access for underserved communities. We focus on growth stage companies. So we typically look for things such as path to profitability, product market fit, and as well as a social impact return. The way it connects to Cohen Circle is it is a partner fund of Cohen Circle. So it is co-founded by Betsy Cohen and Amanda Abrams, who I previously mentioned are the co-founder and CEO of Cohen Circle. And we have partnered with 2 outside partners, Henrietta Four and Teresa Russell, who also bring a tremendous amount of experience to the table from the health side, CEO and NGO space. So we are incredibly excited to partner with them. The benefit of being partnered with Cohen Circle is we get to leverage the entire ecosystem of Cohen Circle. So we get the back office support, the deep knowledge base of the broader team, and all the resources and network that the Cohen Circle team has to offer.
When you were starting up Radiate Capital, what were some of the challenges that came along with it?
Absolutely. So when you go to raise a first-time fund, which is what we are, we're a first-time fund manager, you have to meet with other investors who want to raise capital. Mm-hmm. So the way venture funds work is in order for us to invest in companies, people have to invest in us. And that investment dollars can come from institutions, family offices, high net worth individuals. So the biggest challenge for a first time fund manager is raising capital and convincing people to take that bet on you. Mm-hmm. The fundraising market for venture funds doing get investment dollars into their funds was challenged across the board. It doesn't matter if you're a first-time fund or a fifth-time fund last year. So the challenges that we had faced in our initial startup years are no different than any other first-time fund who is trying to go out and raise capital. Those challenges, we're starting to see a lot more dollars move in the ecosystem now. So we're incredibly excited about what is to come this year and in the following years.
Okay. So what is your current role at Radiate Capital? And I know you said Radiate Capital is very focused on ESG. Can you speak to like the broader role of ESG in VC?
Absolutely. My role, as you had mentioned at the top of the call, I'm a principal on the team. I wear many hats and so do different things every day, but my primary role is to source and diligence the potential portfolio companies that we will invest in. Once we make the investment decision for our portfolio companies, I work very closely with our management teams of those companies to implement impact key performance metrics. And what that can look like is different for every company, but the goals for us are to measure the breadth and depth of the impact these companies have, and this impact that the companies that we partner with are already core to their mission. It's already what these companies are doing. We're just putting a finer point on what it is that they're already helping individuals with across the board through their solutions, and creating a measurable framework for these companies to measure it both with us and then eventually when we will exit the business. Ideally, the way this gets set up is, and we make it our goal to work with these management teams to measure data that the company already has so that it is easy and sustainable and can flow very easily between the two teams. In terms of ESG and the broader VC ecosystem, we've seen a huge transition over the last few years with a lot of focus. In the beginning, there was a lot of questions on definitions and measurement, and I still think we have some way to go. But what's the real critical takeaway for us is there's been a heightened focus on putting more dollars and more capital and more resources in people who have historically been left out of this ecosystem, out of the solutions in the health and fintech space that we focus on. Getting, for example, in the fintech space, reaching people who've been underbanked or underserved, in the health space, looking for solutions that are helping people access care more easily or afford more care or navigate the care system. And in the VC system itself, putting more hands in the dollars of diverse leaders and diverse capital managers. No one, it is well established at this point that diversity leads to innovation of thought and really creates new and interesting ideas and new approaches because everyone can draw on different experiences and different life challenges, and that is so critical. So in the roadmap of ESG and impact in the venture space, we still have a long way to go, but it is so exciting to be on this journey and be part of that change.
For sure. I know you mentioned earlier that you work with founders to implement performance metrics. I was wondering if you could give us some examples of what these metrics look like.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, we work health and fintech. As you can imagine, metrics for those two companies are going to look very different.
Right.
On a high level, though, we focus on breadth and depth. So that can look like how many lives do you touch? How many dollars are you helping to save, or how many dollars are you creating for people to have access to? What is the ease of health? How many more people can get to the doctor? So how broad can you go and how deep can you go? And that, like I mentioned, can look different with every company, but that is the broad scope of what we look for.
And just as a follow-up, is this generally tough to do, or like how difficult is it to like create these metrics and then implement them?
Absolutely. When I was talking about the ESG and how and the types of companies we like to partner with, for us, we look for companies that generate both financial and social impact returns. And why that's a double lens for us is the companies that we partner with already have this social impact mission embedded in what they are doing. So for the most part, these companies already have this data on their fingertips. And we are just helping them sort through the data that they have to create the specific measurement that we will then keep track of going forward. These companies already know exactly who they're trying to serve and what they're trying to achieve. And by partnering with us, we help them, if they don't already have that story curated, if they're not already tracking those metrics on a quantitative basis, we can help them come up with those concepts.
Got it. So I know Radiate Capital focuses on health and fintech, as you mentioned. Can you talk about some of the trends you're currently seeing in these spaces?
Absolutely. There's a lot happening in both spaces. On the fintech side, I'll highlight one of the things we're most excited about, or one of the many trends we're very excited about, which is cash flow underwriting, for example. So when you go to apply for a loan product, such as cell phone plan, an apartment, a mortgage loan, a student loan, your credit profile gets checked via like Equifax or FICO or TransUnion. Mm-hmm. But if you're a newcomer to the US, you're a student or a young person, if you're just historically been underbanked, your credit profile may be what we call very thin or a no credit profile, which mm-hmm. means that you're going to be excluded from these products because the institutions that'll give you a loan are not going to be able to have a snapshot of who you are financially. Mm-hmm. Cashflow underwriting enables a different way of measuring the financial profile. What it does is it looks at the cash that's coming in and out of your bank account mm-hmm. to show that you have reliable income coming in and you consistently pay going out and you maintain a strong balance. Mm-hmm. And that is another way to measure someone's financial profile. And mm-hmm. when you think about the implications of that, that is a huge step in creating a much greater financial inclusion system. So we're incredibly excited about what we're seeing for cash flow underwriting on the fintech side. Other on the health side, what we're really looking, there's a lot that's happening on the health side, but some examples, just a huge opportunity in Medicaid, mental mm. behavioral health, social determinants of health, the incorporation of AI. There's a lot to do in both spaces mm-hmm. To create a greater sustainable future.
Mm-hmm. So these industries primarily rely on legacy systems in the past. So do you think that the industries are ready to adapt such changes that these new fintechs and startups are bringing?
It's a great question. We are getting there. Both of these industries are incredibly regulated. There's mm-hmm. a high amount of technical detail that goes into how these are set up, and they're very embedded systems. Mm-hmm. On the health side, we are definitely at more of the beginning stages of this evolution towards value-based care and how to incorporate AI. And there's a lot of different models and partnerships that are being tested right now. We will get there. It is going to take some time for the system to figure out what this next stage looks like. Mm-hmm. In the fintech space, we've seen a large change over the last decade in terms of how consumers and how end users can work with financial systems and how financial systems work within each other. The next stage for the fintech is akin to what I was mentioning with cash flow underwriting, is how do we create greater financial inclusion? How do we adjust for the fact that by 2050, net population growth in the US, for example, is going to come strictly from immigration? Mm-hmm. How are we going to create greater financial education for more people? How are we going to get the underbanked into the system? That's the next stage that we're really focused on in fintech. And we're seeing banks, credit unions, various financial institutions, again, look at various different partnerships and making strategic investments in these types of solutions. And it's really exciting to see all the movement in the space and who's going to really come out with the next great solutions that'll set the precedent for everybody else.
Mm-hmm. That's a great transition into my next question. Radiant Capital recently invested in Nova Credit. I'd love to hear more about what is Nova Credit and why you chose to invest in them specifically.
I'm so happy you asked. I love this company so much. Nova Credit is a great company. Nova Credit's on the mission to unlock dollars for newcomers and migrants who are moving from one country to the next. As I was briefly explaining through cash flow underwriting, a lot of people are locked out of our financial system. When you are an immigrant or a migrant and you move from one country into the US, for example, and I'll use the US, but Nova Credit does sell their product to other countries as well, which I'll circle back to in a bit. But when you move, your credit profile cannot move with you. Credit mm-hmm. profiles do not move across country lines at this point. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you move to the US, like I mentioned before, even like if we go for a student loan, a car loan, a mortgage, our credit profile gets checked. And if you've just moved here, you're going to have no credit profile because you don't even have a social security number yet or an ITIN mm-hmm. number yet. And so you're going to either be viable for a shark loan, really high mm-hmm. rates, really strong penalties. It's going to be very challenging. And you end up with all of these starter products, which may not mirror what your financial profile was from the country that you just moved from. Mm-hmm. So what Nova Credit does is, let's say I am going to apply for a cell phone plan with Verizon. I've just moved here from Nigeria. I come to the U.S. I go to apply for a plan with Verizon. Verizon says, do you have a social security number? No, go to Nova Credit. I get rerouted. I say, yes, Nova Credit, please pull my credit profile information. They standardize and aggregate a report that is similar to what an Equifax, a FICO, a TransUnion credit report looks like here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and provides that to Verizon. And I'm just using Verizon as an example. They mm-hmm. have a variety of other customers, especially one that I would like to notice, checking and savings accounts as well, because that mm-hmm. is something people also get locked out of. But Verizon goes, great, now I can see the credit profile of this person, and I can actually give them the phone plan based on what their credit worthiness is, not just what they've done here in the U.S., but what they have been building their entire life. Mm-hmm. The implication of that is so great. Again, as I quickly mentioned before, net population growth here in the U.S. by 2050 is going to be 100% immigration. Mm-hmm. And all of those people will be locked out of our financial system if we can't find a way to move their credit profiles with them. Mm-hmm. So Nova Credit is unlocking access to millions of dollars for mm-hmm. immigrants. They are doing this here in the U.S. They're working with organizations in Canada, the U.K., UAE, and Hong Kong. And they're mm-hmm. able to support individuals from over 100 different migrant corridors. It's such a great company, and I'm so excited to, I could go on forever about the solution that they're bringing and how they're building this out.
Yeah, for sure. I can definitely see the use case. Like as we were talking about it on our previous call, like my parents are immigrants themselves from India and they had to start from scratch, but I'm sure if this product was available back then, maybe they could have started from a little bit more and maybe have been ahead in life today, quote unquote. So definitely a really, really great product and very exciting to hear about. I have Absolutely. One last question for you about Radiate Capital. You said it's a woman-led VC fund, and I'm just curious to know, what is that experience like?
Our four general partners are amazing women who have been pioneers in each of their careers and have been historically the first woman sitting at their tables. Mm-hmm. To be able to learn and grow behind those women and support them and engage with them, it has been such a fabulous experience. There's so much collaboration and teamwork that goes into building a fund in general, and to be able to do it with really strong women who are so well known across the various verticals that we're focused on and across their previous careers is such a valuable experience. It's been a lot of fun, and it's an absolute pleasure to have the opportunity to work with these women.
That's awesome. Kind of on that note, to talk about your experience back in investment banking, you mentioned that that was a little bit more of a male-dominated environment. We also talked a little bit about how there was a broken rung issue. Can you share more about your experience when you were working in investment banking?
Absolutely. When I first started out in my career, there was a large push to get women into the analyst seat, so into the mm-hmm. junior seat. But as I looked around, I saw some peers that were women on my level, on that junior level. And I saw women at the top, and I saw no one in the middle. Mm-hmm. And that had the dual effect of frustrating me mm-hmm. and incentivizing me. As I'm sure you and a lot of your listeners know, most organizations are a pyramid with less seats at the table as you go to the top of the pyramid. Mm-hmm. There was no one showing women how to get through middle management and to be at that table continuously and make mm-hmm. it through the bottom to the top. Mm-hmm. I decided early when I realized this, I decided early at that stage that I wanted a seat at that table and I mm-hmm. wanted to be what I could not see.
Mm-hmm. And what was that process like working up the ladder? Like, I'm sure you faced a lot of challenges. Can you share more about that?
It required a lot of self-affirmation, right? So the mm-hmm. one thing I really want to impart is if you are hired and you are given an opportunity to share your input and contribute, it is because the people around you feel that you deserve to be there. Mm-hmm. And so use your voice, speak your mind, interact with your peers the way that is authentic to you. Mm-hmm. Don't lose who you are. Don't try to change your demeanor, mm-hmm. but keep it professional keep it tight, and use your voice. Raise your hand, take the opportunities. Don't let yourself be potentially spoken over. Or if someone's trying to, we all have this, both male and female, where someone tries to take credit for an idea, make sure that you have people around you who also are saying, wait, hold on a second, that was Kritika's idea as well. Mm-hmm. We agree with both of you. People who are in your corner. Mm-hmm. I can't emphasize enough the importance of network and cheerleaders, not just within your group, but outside of your group, because sometimes you need those people to reinforce what you are doing and not just be coming from you. But most importantly, you need to go after it and you need to take your opportunities and really have the trust in yourself that you'll make mistakes, but so does everybody, and we move on. And those are some of the key learnings that took me a little while to grow into, but again, it's about having that reinforced self-image of, I deserve to be here, just like my male colleagues and just like my other female colleagues. There's a reason why I'm here. So I'm going to do my job and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And if I don't get it exactly right, I'm going to learn and I'm going to move forward.
I have a follow-up question to that. This is off the script. In the moments where you felt frustrated for the lack of women leadership or like women around you, how did you navigate those feelings? Because I feel like they're very common among girls who you know, like see that lack of diversity.
I channeled them. At the times where I was hitting road bumps and feeling generally frustrated, I just kept going and said, if not, in my mind, it was, if not me, then who? If I bow out, maybe someone else will step in. And there will be, and there has been plenty of other women who are doing the work across the board. This was not unique to me. But I strongly felt I have the aptitude to do this. I like what I'm doing. I have a passion for what I'm doing. No matter where I go, and no matter where anyone goes, there are frustrations in every organization. We always hear this, the devil that you know versus the devil that you don't. So you pick your battles and you choose. And in those moments of deep frustration, I would process that frustration and say, okay, what is it that's frustrating me? Can I do something about it? Is there something that I can change? What can I control? And what I can't control, I just have to let go of, because there is too much happening and too much opportunity. Frustration only clouds your judgment, it only prevents you from doing your best work. So how do we process what we're feeling, decide what we can do, and then whatever we can't, we push to the side and we move forward.
Great advice. I have two more questions. So what experience do you look for when someone is trying to break into BC? Like, what experience do you hope they bring, or even skills that they bring?
Absolutely. I'm going to take this question as if I'm speaking to an analyst or junior associate, someone who's more on the entry level side. Having a grasp of your core financial concepts, things that you could learn from financial courses or investing clubs or resources online, come prepared with some of your base core knowledge. It doesn't have to, and that can come, again, also from previous work experience that maybe isn't a direct funnel into what you're doing, but have a grasp of the financial concepts. Creative thinking and hunger to learn. Come be prepared to learn a lot and contribute and bring new and innovative ideas. That's something that we and myself would look for. And I would put, I'd prefer, if not with a slight edge, I really look for soft skills, i.e. your EQ. Venture capital business in general really is a relationship business. So do I get the sense from you that you can engage with clients in a professional manner, but one that can feel like a personal connection? I'll give you a really good example of how this can come to light. When I was interviewing for one of my initial roles in investment banking, I got asked very directly why they should hire me, someone from a non-target school with a general business and psych dual major, over a target school or an Ivy with a finance, mathematics, economics background. Why me over them? to which I responded because I know how to talk to people. I can tell when a client is losing interest or falling asleep at the table. I can tell when maybe they're not understanding exactly the concepts and we need to dial it back. But I also can go to dinner with them and learn about their kids and remember that and ask about how their kid's soccer game was or how college tours are going. And why that is so important is because that client, when they choose who they want to do business with, is going to feel like you have their back and you have developed trust with them. So being able to develop those relationships, not just with people you're going to do business with, but also other, you know, other investment banks or other people across your organization, being able to build up a network based on your soft skills is so critical to success in venture capital and business. And I look very hard at that skill as well.
Okay. So EQ is just as important as IQ is what I'm hearing.
Yes, that is exactly right.
Got it. And my last question for you before we wrap it up, you were recently in the fifth class of the 40 Rising Stars Under 40 named by VC Journal. And just for some context for our listeners, this class is described as a group that promises to ignite inspiration and foster optimism for the future of industry. So on that note, where do you hope to see the VC industry go in, say, the next 5 years?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, the thesis and the mission of Radiate is to invest in scalable health and fintech companies that are generating both financial and social returns. We're incredibly excited, and I'm incredibly excited to see new innovative solutions, both from the company side, as well as the VC side, on how to create a greater sustainable and more inclusive future.
That's awesome. And such a positive note to end our conversation. But thank you again, Corinne, for coming on the podcast today, sharing your story with us. We definitely took away a lot of valuable lessons, and it was so inspiring to hear about Radiate Capital and all the great work they're doing. So thank you for sharing everything with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we wish you all the best with your future endeavors and everything with Radiate Capital and your career.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
And a thank you to our listeners for tuning into this week's podcast and supporting Girls Into VC. Make sure to check out our website, girlsintovc.com, and follow us on our social media at Girls Into VC. Join us every other Wednesday to hear from female venture capitalists, entrepreneurs, innovators, and advocates about their career paths and lessons they have learned along the way. See you soon.